Well, it's Sunday evening, the first day of December. And over recent weeks, if not months, I've been collating a lot of information about three of my great-grandmothers. Now, this is with the intention of writing at least a book of short stories, if not a complete novel, that would be fiction based on fact. So I'll start with the names of my great-grandmothers. I have great-granny Baxter, whose maiden name was Higgins. Great-granny O'Neill, whose maiden name was Donnelly, and great-granny Taylor, whose maiden name was Duggan. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to start with great-granny Baxter, because I grew up in Oma, where granny had her farm. She had a cottage in 17 acres, going from the Derry Road all the way down to the banks of the River Strool. So great-granny Baxter is a very iconic figure in our family tradition. She exerted a powerful and lasting influence on my father in his childhood, right through to his teenage years. For he was about 14 years old when she died. There are so many stories about my great-grandmother that it's difficult to know where to begin. She was the mother of my grandmother, my granny, who I'm always talking about, and whose wisdoms and old country sayings have been passed on to me, mainly because I was the only one who ever listened to her. Although, to be fair, it was because I spent most of my teenage years sitting with her of an evening in her little house not too far from our own. Her mother was Mary Ann Higgins, great-granny Baxter. And Mary Ann had been in service in that she was, I think she started off pretty low down in service. She might have just been a maid, but she ended up being a lady's maid. And she served an English captain and his daughter. Now, he was a widower. And she became lady's maid to the daughter. They were a very well-heeled family. You know, there was obviously money, old money, I would say. And in her 20s, she met and decided to walk out with a young man called Samuel Baxter. And Samuel was a Protestant. Mary Ann Higgins, my great-grandmother, was a Catholic. Now, that was playing with fire in those days. I mean, we're going right back to, she was born in 1871, so it would have been around the turn of the century, around about 1900 maybe, something like that. But they fell deeply in love, and the long and short of it is that Samuel became a Catholic in order to marry Mary Ann. Because again, in those days, mixed marriages were not allowed. I mean, there was this huge divide, you know, put in place through the Reformation, which was about 400 years before that. So, Mary Ann Higgins became Mary Ann Baxter. And suffice to say that Samuel was disowned by his family. Now, his family were fairly well healed. In fact, it turned out that one of his uncles was knighted by Queen Victoria. One of his uncles, he was called William Baxter, who became Sir William Baxter. And I think he owned a chain of pharmacies across the north of Ireland. So Samuel came from a pretty well-heeled family. But anyway, in the event, he was disowned and made to shift for himself, so to speak, you know, make his own way in the world. So they lived a very modest life. They had a little rented house. It was a little council house. And things just tripped along quite ordinarily, you know, day to day. They had their children. They had my grandmother, who was Margaret, my great aunt, who was Mary, a son called Samuel, and I think there was another son, another brother, whether or not he died or whatever before I was born, but everything was quite ordinary until, and this is where the mystery starts to come into the story. It was during what is now commonly referred to as the Hungry 30s. Now, we know what the Hungry 30s did to millions of people living in the Western world. And they weren't called the Hungry 30s for nothing. So you had mass unemployment. This was after World War One. Mass unemployment. Obviously, incredible amounts of poverty. And at the same time, you had disaster striking the United States with the Dust Bowl. And failure of crops and banks calling in loans. And, you know, it was all building up then to World War II. But during the Hungry 30s, my great-grandmother put on her hat and her best coat and headed into Oma town centre for what was a big sale of property, an auction. It's called an auction. And in this auction, she bought the thatched cottage and 17 acres for cash. So, until the day she died and long after, no one had any idea where she got that money from. But she was an upright, honest woman. So it was not by foul means, it was by fair. And some of us in the family suspected that it may have been the captain's daughter who she was lady's maid to. She may have been left something in her will. I don't know. There's lots and lots of theories. And some of these I'm still exploring, by the way, because it's easier to check up records in this day and age. You know, you can go online and find things out. Now, I hasten to add, by the way, that one of Mary Ann's children was my great uncle, James Baxter. Now, there's a massive story in there as well. But again, that's for another day. I mean, I'm literally weaving these stories together, and every so often, it seems that I have to start adding more off the warp onto the weaving. You know, you've got the weft and the warp, and the weft is going across, and that's what you keep on filling in. But the warp are those strings going down. And this is how I found myself for most of this year, continually in my imagination, adding on more of the warp, because the story just keeps getting longer and longer and bigger, and it's going out all kinds of ways. So I have been making lots and lots of notes. Anyway, So she now found herself with this cottage, a thatch cottage. It turned out to be the only remaining thatch cottage in Oma townland, by the way, by the time she died. So there was 17 acres. There was orchards, and she kept cows, she kept goats. She produced her own milk from the goats and the cows. She sold eggs, she kept hens. She became a self-sufficient pioneer. And Samuel kept on the little rented house in the town. So as when Mary got married, she would be able to take over the tenancy. So they were a very interesting couple. So Mary Ann was down at this farm and living there and farming and selling some of her produce in town. And she was so highly respected in Oma that the shopkeepers, most of whom at that time were Protestant, would tip their hats to her. And that was praise indeed, actually, because, of course, she was a Catholic. She was a Catholic woman, but she was so highly respected. She had this powerful work ethic, and she was proud, and she was thrifty, and, you know, there was no cobwebs on her. So she had one brother. Great granny had a brother who was called John. And I think that was really just her family line. That was about the end of that. So where did she work? Where did she work serving this young lady, the daughter of the English captain? Well, it was a big house in Oma called Crevena House. It was a large mansion, and it was belonging to a Protestant family, and it was steeped in the military tradition on Oma's Crevena Road. Apparently, it still stands on a hill at the top of the sweeping drive, but it's now deserted. It was it was to this thatched cottage. Now I'm kind of shifting myself on a wee bit here. But the thatched cottage became really important within the family, not just the Higgins family and the Baxter name, but later on the O'Neill family. Because, of course, again, going back 400 years or so, most of the Catholic population had become dispossessed of land. And in fact, at one point, you weren't allowed to hold land. But all that's history, you know. We grew up in the knowledge that there was a matriarch in our family who owned her own house and owned land. And that was incredibly important. And give us a sense of belonging. Now, for myself, that little thatched cottage and 17 acres had an enormous influence upon me, because I craved that life. Even my growing up years, you know, and teenagers don't really think about stuff like that, but I often thought about it, and it grounded me, that image. And my grandmother, this is Mary Ann's daughter, my grandmother, telling me all the stories and telling me about the history and the Easter Rising and the fairies and Cuchulainn, the Hound of Ulster, and Finn McCool. So my life was enriched by all of that. And in later years, my father, who loved to be out in the cottage, looked at me one day and he said, you know, history does repeat itself. And he was referring to several things that were happening in my life, one of which was basically a carbon copy of what happened to my great granny O'Neill. And the other being the fact that I'd come back to Ireland, bought an old cottage, brought it back to life, brought the land back to life, and was walking in the footsteps of great granny Baxter. So, my father spent a lot of his very young years with his granny, great granny Baxter. She loved him because he had red hair, and it so happens that Samuel had red hair, her husband. And my father had fantastic memories of his granny, because granny never slept in the cottage. No. She insisted on having the great big old brass bed set up in the barn, and the barn was attached to the cottage, and the bed was pushed up against what was the chimney wall, so there would be a fair amount of passive heat coming through. But not only did she sleep in the barn, but she never closed the door of the barn. And my father would stay with her, and he would sleep with her in the bed just as a young cub. And he used to say, I had to wait while granny was saying the rosary. She'd be kneeling down on the floor saying the rosary, and then you'd get through the rosary, and then she'd be combing her hair. She had long, long hair that she kept in plaits. And he said, this would go on forever. And I would be thinking to myself, oh, get into bed, because it's cold. And, you know, of course, granny being in bed, the bed would get nice and warm pretty quickly. But he had very, very fond memories of his grandmother. She was a huge influence on his life, and he loved her dearly. And she used to tell him that she would leave the cottage and the farm to him in her will. And there's another story in a huge tangled up mess, because she died intestate. She didn't leave a will. And there was a very sad story that followed on from that. But anyway, again, this is going off in another direction. So, just to kind of surmise, she was born about 1871. And she died in 1945, and she was 74 years old. So for that time, you know, that was a grand old age to live to, 74. And she worked right up until about a week, I think, before she died. You know, walking the mile and a half or so into town with her eggs and milk, selling that at the local shops. And she would go to mass, I think, most days as well. And then back down on the farm. And I do remember, because I was born well after great granny died. I was born 10 years after she died. But I do remember going into the cottage because my great uncle James lived there, and it was immaculate. The cottage was immaculate, had the most beautiful flagstone floor, had a parlour which was also a library, and there was a huge globe of the world. You know, one of those ones that sits in its own kind of setting and you could spin it. It was massive. It just sat right in the middle of the floor, and there was a green velvet curtain on a great big brass curtain rail across the door on the outside. And there was all these books in there, and that fascinated me as a child. And then there was a range, an old lead range in the sort of big open kitchen, and that was all polished. And that's where everything was cooked and baked. And then there was two little bedrooms off that main room, much like my own cottage here. Very similar. So the one thing I wanted to add, and this is just, I mean, I'm only just beginning to touch on these stories. But the one thing I wanted to add, most of you know that I wear glasses for reading or for screen work. In fact, I could not read a word without my glasses being on. And when my Uncle James died, now this is my Uncle James, not my great uncle, because he lived with my grandmother until she died. So when he died, one of my brothers was clearing out the house, or helping to clear the house out, and boxes of memorabilia. And inside one of these boxes was a little pair of wire-rimmed glasses inside a bag that said, "Great Granny Baxter's glasses." And Phelan said to me, "Would you like them, Clem?" I said, "Yeah, of course I would. I just wanted something that was so personal. You know, glasses that my great granny wore." And I put them on, and they were the perfect reading glasses. Absolutely perfect. I could read perfectly with them on. So there we go. Isn't that amazing? Anyway, that's just the beginning of many, many stories. And I hope to get the writing done, you know, in the near future. And like I say, whether it's going to be a book of short stories or a longer book, or a book, a fictional book, because I can then embellish the stories and use my imagination, the powers of my imagination, to almost reenact those lives. Yeah. So blessings to you all. And on this lovely day, the first day of December, enjoy the run-up to Christmas, to Yule, to midwinter. Because these are lovely days. They're days of warm fires and hot drinks, lots of carbohydrate foods and storytelling, or watching the screen, snuggling up. Do enjoy the day that's in it. That was one of my grandmother's favourite sayings. Enjoy the day that's in it. So blessings to you all, my friends.